This world is not my home. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. Pass through. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. This world is not my home.
Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Jessica.
And this is episode 110 of the Double Knit Podcast.
Good evening.
Good evening. We won't complain about the weather.
No, we won't. We won't complain about anything.
It feels like fall.
Yes, it does. A little bit.
And fair warning, my husband has bronchitis and he's in the other room, but he still is having coughing fits. Hopefully it won't come through too much.
Yeah.
But there's the cat.
Yeah.
As soon as he went in there, she's like, let me in. So we have Cardi Party going,
mm-hmm.
and that goes through, when did I say, October 3rd? No, November?
Mm-hmm.
September, October. Yeah, through November. Cardigans only. Someone asked if they converted a pullover to a cardigan, if that was fine. I was like, yes, because it ends up being a cardigan. And it can be any size, so it could be for, you know,
baby.
A cardigan for your dog,
or it can be don't make for your dog a cardigan,
or your kids, or a baby cardigan. It doesn't matter. Any cardigan you can enter, and a whips count.
Yeah, there's some finished ones already.
I know.
Some people got some up there. Like the minute you put up the thread,
I know it's exciting.
Some whips that they finished up. So good for them.
I think someone had started theirs last year during Cardi Party.
Yes, that's somebody said that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'll post prizes when I have them. I've been kind of out of sorts since I got back from vacation. Which has been like over a month. But, you know, it takes
a while. I know what that's like.
So, and I was anticipating the beginning of the school year, but our teachers are on strike, which I support them.
I do support
but
them as well.
I mean, it's a pain in the butt for me. It's like, you know, inconvenient, but it's important.
Yes.
So, also out of sorts because I've been figuring out what to do with Audrey.
Yeah.
It's been okay. Anyway, let's talk about knitting.
Yeah.
What are you knitting?
You want me to talk? Okay. Yeah. So, I feel like I haven't done a lot, but I think it's just because it was a lot of the same. So, I think I mentioned last time Andy had given me a huge amount of Cascade 220.
Yeah.
So, the first thing I did with that was knit 5 helix hats. I think I have enough yarn for approximately, like, another 15 to 20. But then I remembered that I had said I was interested in doing single skein September with hand spun. So I got started on that. And I knit a kind of a scarflet button cowl type situation.
It's a situation.
With some 2-ply bulky that I spun during the retreat in April that I had sort of modeled after the bulky 2-ply that Spin Cycle makes. Because we saw that at Diva Yarn and I was like, I want to spin something like that. So,
I don't remember you spinning at the retreat.
Yeah, I did a lot of spinning, actually. Oh. I spun like all that green stuff and
I don't remember what else I did.
Yeah, the green stuff. I think some pink stuff. I don't remember. Anyway, so the pattern I used was the mustard scarf by Jane Richmond. Which is just like a mesh lace. And I had to like start it and rip it out a bunch of times to try to figure out the right width for it because my yarn is totally different than the called for yarn.
Mm-hmm. Is that a free pattern?
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's super basic. So though at one point, I don't know how I did this. I was watching TV and I remember going, oh, wait, I made a mistake. And I ripped back and I started knitting again. And I think the mistake I had made that I didn't actually end up correcting when I ripped back was that I had skipped a row. So I flipped my pattern. So it's like on one side it's this mesh lace. On the other side it's gartery.
Hmm.
But mine flips, but it flips exactly at the halfway point on the scarf, so it actually looks kind of intentional. At least that's what I'm telling people. And it needs a big button. I haven't done that yet. And then I also did a hat based on a pattern called Excess, which is, I think, another freebie on Ravelry. It's actually very similar to Barley from the Tinkinnitz collection, where it's just a simple stockinette hat with a section of garter. But the difference with this is that it has a stockinette hem as well. So you just knit a whole bunch of stockinette and fold it in half. And, you know, you do provisional cast on, fold it in half, knit the beginning and the end together, and then continue on. So it has a different look, and it's done in a fingering weight. So, and I did that in one of the many yarns that I spun this spring where I was just trying to use up all my weird little bits and bobs. So it's kind of a...
like maybe I knit that hat.
Yeah?
That sounds familiar.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. But it's like a blue marl, and it came out really nice. And then right now I'm binding off on the Chevron baby hat, which is... one of these ones where you're like knit, like you're knitting a little zigzaggy chevron strip of knitting that kind of folds up origami style, and you sew it up, and it makes one of those like old fashioned kind of like peaked baby hats. Yeah, it's not super soft. This is
you get it soft. You want it?
Yeah, it's a little bit. I mean, it's a pole worth, so it's not going to be like crazy soft. And this is all leftover bits from spinning classes with Judith McKenzie. So this is all fiber that she had dyed, and
it feels like one of the like the Noro blends when they like take a bunch of stuff and blend it up, like, you know, they'll have wool and silk and cotton and, you know, one of those things that they do.
I think it'll soften up a bit and hopefully stretch out a bit, because it's not quite the right size, but I figure babies come in different sizes. And then what am I? Oh, and then I have this tiny little ball of bulky hand spun. And I was like, I'll just do like a headband ear warmer thing. And then I realized that no, I was only going to get like 8 inches of headband done. So then I grabbed another little skein. And I'm like, I'm just going to keep knitting on it. And then I ran out of that. And then I did another one. So I now have the world's weirdest color blocked hand spun bulky ear warmer done. And then the last one I just started, I like really have just barely started. Melissa Labar came out with a new pattern called the Lou Leaf Hat, L-U Leaf Hat. Mm-hmm. And, it's like a cloche with a leaf, like a leaf shaped band on it. Mm-hmm. And it's adorable. And it's sized from baby through adult. So I bought it, like, I'm going to make a million of these. It's going to be a really good stash buster. So I think I've got enough yarn to do.
What yarn does it call for?
It's been in a worsted.
Okay.
So, and I've got some BFL that I won as a door prize from the Knitters Guild at the holiday party a year or two ago that I didn't like the color of, and I overdyed. And so it's not like the softest yarn, but anyway, so I'm doing that. Anyway, that's all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't feel like I'm getting a ton done.
Did you finish anything? Oh, that's it?
Well, yeah. I finished... Just six hats and a scarflet.
Oh, that's it.
And a headband. So, that's pretty good.
Accessorize!
That's pretty good. Yeah. It feels like my list looks so short, but then I'm like, alright, well, 5 Helix hats. That's like, you know, a good chunk of knitting there.
Yeah, good bit of knitting.
Yeah, so what are you doing?
I am working on my channel cardigan, which I took on vacation with me. And got past like 7 inches into the body and realized when I got home that I hadn't changed my needle size after the ribbing, which is a bummer. And then I threw a tantrum and then I ripped it all out. And now I have like, I'm supposed to knit it to 17 and a half inches. I'm like almost there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had like half an inch last night when I measured it. But you knit the body. So it's a cardigan by Jared Flood from the Fall Wool People from last year. Mm-hmm. I'm knitting it in Cascade 220 in this, like, burnt orange heather color. Mm-hmm. And you knit it from the bottom up, and it's supposed to have raglan sleeve, like, raglan seams. You knit the sleeves separately, and then you sew in the raglans. And then you separately sew, or knit, this big shawl collar thing, because it's in a different stitch.
Oh, right.
It's more compact or something. And you knit it on the smaller needle, and then you sew it. Mm-hmm. But I don't want I talked about this last time. I don't want the raglan seams because I feel with the weight of the sweater, it's just going to drag off my shoulders. Mm-hmm. I don't like how raglans look on me. So I'm going to redo the sleeves so that they're set-in sleeves. I mean, that's the biggest modification. It's a pretty big one. Mm-hmm. So I was just waiting until I was done with the body to sit down and do all the math stuff for that.
So you're going
to
do a top-down set-in?
Yeah, I haven't decided yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to look at the stitch patterns, because there are two. There's, like, a single moss stitch, and then, like a chevron texture stitch. Mm-hmm. And I had to look at the sleeves and see where that falls on right. And like figure out how to make works.
It match up.
Yeah. So, but I'm not worried about that. The body has very little shaping in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm done with the shaping. And I'm just knitting the last like half inch or so of the body before I do the sleeve mass. And then I had talked about knitting Chuck last time, and I finished the body. Mm-hmm. And I tried it on, and with a lot of Andy's pattern. It's by Andy Satterlund. It's a cabled pullover, cropped pullover. And I had repurposed a yarn from a sweater that I'd knit last year of one of her patterns and that I never wore. So I decided to knit Chuck. And most of her patterns have, they're for 0 to 2 inches of negative ease. Mm-hmm. And this is at 2. I don't like how it's pulling the fabric. So I'm going to rip it out again.
Oh, no.
Or I might just rip it out till the underarms and then just cast on more stitches.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't pull as much right at the bust.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not that much knitting because it's a cropped
pullover.
And then the sleeves are plain, so they'll go speedy quick.
Right.
But I tried it on and I was like, I don't know if I like it with the 2 inches of negative ease. I want more like 1. So I could figure out that math and do it. So lots of math for my sweaters.
Lots of thinking going on.
Yeah, and I'm still working on those stripey socks. They're my morning commute knitting. I tend not to knit in the afternoon because the bus is more crowded and I am very tired. And I am almost done with the sample cardigan.
Oh, cool.
Which I was getting yarn in the mail for while I was gone on vacation, which is good. I have to mail it this weekend, so.
Oh.
I know. Yep.
All
right. It would qualify for Cardi Party, but I can't share it.
No.
So.
That's all right.
Yeah. But I'm going to make it under my deadline, so that's happy.
Yeah.
I like it. And I have not finished anything, which is weird for me.
Yeah. But you're doing a lot of knitting, though.
I am. So I'm going to have, like, probably 2 sweaters. Well, the sample cardigan is going to be done this weekend. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have 2 more sweaters done at about the same time.
Right. They'll just all get done at once.
Yeah. So I'm making progress on everything.
Yeah.
But,
and then sewing stuff, too.
Yeah, I had some sewing. I did some sewing. So I decided this year, instead of taking Audrey back to school shopping, which I absolutely hate, and after watching that documentary that I talked about last time, that I don't want to pay for cheap kids' clothes, and I would prefer to make them. So we did a shopping expedition.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. We looked at patterns, and she told me what kind of stuff she wants, which is comfortable, which means, to me, that means knits for kids. And she wears leggings and with dresses over. Mm-hmm. And then t-shirts with leggings, or like tunics with leggings, or like everything's with leggings, basically. Yeah. And she'll wear sweaters and stuff that I knit her. Uh-huh. So we picked out a pattern. I can't remember. It's a Simplicity pattern. I posted it on Instagram. It's a t-shirt, a long and short sleeve t-shirt, a cardigan that has like a little ruffle, and leggings that are all in knit fabric, and then there's a pattern for a skirt that's just like an elastic waist skirt that you can make out of pretty much any fabric.
Cool.
So she chose, what's her name? Annie Watt. I want to say she's like an illustrator. She designs fabric and stuff. She picked out one of her, I think it's from our honeymoon fabric line. Mm-hmm. So it's like black with like bright purple and bright green and teal and stuff on it for the skirt, and then like a bright pink for the leggings. And I made the leggings, and they're one piece, so they're super easy.
Oh, wow.
You just cut out the 2 legs, you sew the inseams, you shove 1 leg inside the other, you sew the crotch, you do the waistband and the hems, and that's it.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure that adult leggings are the same, so if you're looking for a legging pattern, you can probably find one super easy. And then I sewed the cardigan, which is out. I'll show it to you. And she chose black. And I was like, so sophisticated.
So emo.
So cute. Black knit, open front cardigan with a little ruffle.
Adorable.
Cute?
So cute.
Yeah. So I need some.
It is so stylish. A little black Cardi. Yeah. Oh, and then, oh, look at that.
It's like a little peplum.
Adorable. Yeah. Like, so it's a double ruffle on the front. And then just a gather along the peplum in the back. So it's very cool.
And they kind of come down in points in the front.
Oh,
so
it's like, so cute.
Yeah. I think it turned out pretty well. It does fit her.
For now.
Yeah. I think it'll fit her for a while. It's a little bit big, but I wanted that on purpose.
Oh, so cute.
Yeah. And so I sewed the leggings. The leggings took like 30 minutes after I cut them out. And this took like a couple hours because like... You gotta gather everything, you gotta pre-hem the ruffles, and you gotta sew pieces, but, I mean, still, it's, like, faster than knitting her one.
Oh, sure.
And it's good to get practice with knits. So yeah. I'm super happy
with
it.
It's so cute. And then, and I just like the idea that, like, she'll be, like, the only kid at school who doesn't have the clothes that everybody else has.
Yeah.
That's so, a little fashionista. This is so cute.
Oh, thank you.
I love it.
I was super happy with it, and she wore it today.
You can make one for me.
Okay. Pattern shopping together. But like, I was thinking about it, and we went to Pacific Fabrics because they have like kind of a broad selection of things. Like, their stock doesn't change that much, but because I saw some fabric that I bought last summer. But they have a good selection of knits, and she just wanted solid colors for the knits.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it was like $10 a yard, and it was 1 yard for the cardigan and 1 yard for the leggings. And I have tons left over from the leggings, which I could do like a contrast sleeves or something on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or a contrast yoke or something. But it was like $8 a yard. So it's not like I was spending that much more money. Which is the thing about kids, you know, they grow out of them so fast.
Yeah.
And I was able to make the rise on her leggings higher because she's tall.
Right.
She has a hard time. They pop down.
Yeah.
Halfway down her butt. Because, you know, so she's cool. Not, she's like kind of wiry and like lanky and tall. So.
She's going to be the only, you know, first grader with a bespoke wardrobe. That's very cool.
So she was like, this is the color palette I want. I like dark colors with bright pops of color. I was like, who are you?
I was like, you are my child.
She's like, wow. Mom, I want a black cardigan. It will go with everything.
Awesome.
Like, it's not like I don't shop, so I don't know where she gets this stuff. It's so funny.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, so I'm going to sew the skirt this weekend. I still have to wash the fabric for that.
Awesome.
So she'll have a little ensemble for when she does have her first day at school.
Yeah, when she finally gets to go.
Yeah, so I'm excited about sewing more stuff for her, especially the leggings, because I feel like the leggings that I buy for her wherever, or so the fabric is so thin, like the knit is so thin that she's like super hard on clothes. She just wears like instant holes.
Yeah.
Like, I cut off, when I was sewing this stuff, I ended up, like, rotary cutting all the holy ones and making them into, like, bike, like,
little, you know, shortsy.
Bermuda-length shorts for her.
Yeah.
So she could still get use out of them. But
oh, yeah.
That was fun. I mean, it was work, but it was fun because it's like, she's like, is that my stuff? You working on my stuff now? And, yeah. So
well, that's great.
That was my sewing I did over the weekend.
All right.
And I just wanted to say that Helen Stewart of Curious Handmade podcast, she's doing a wardrobe challenge right now.
Oh.
So you just, it can be knitting or sewing, or a combination. And you just go and you like declare what your challenge is. I think it's for 2 months. It might be three. So mine is to sew two tops and a pair of pants.
Ooh.
I know. Which I have fabric for all of it.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's just like, I have to actually do it.
Yeah.
Which I have to wash the fabric for that stuff.
That's always the challenge for me, is the actually doing it part.
Well, I was going to sew one of the tops for myself over the weekend, but I decided to sew her stuff for school because school was supposed to start Wednesday.
Right.
So if you're interested in doing any kind of wardrobe challenge, you can go over to the Curious Handmade group on Ravelry. And there are a ton of people participating over there, and they're a super chatty and helpful group. So that is that.
Very
and
good.
Now we have a book review.
Yes, so, yes, we do.
Elizabeth Doherty, our friend.
Yes.
Of, her design name is Blue Bee Studios. Mm-hmm. She recently released a book with Quince and Company called Top Down Reimagining Set and Sleeve Design. Mm-hmm. I love this book. It's so pretty.
I do too.
She sent us both copies.
Yes. It's a beautiful book. It's like beautifully photographed.
So basically what the book is about, it has 6 sweater designs in it, but what it's about is knitting sleeves from the top down in the round.
Set in sleeves, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, so you've knit one already.
Yeah, I knit one of the samples in the book. I knit Copper Plate, which is an open front cardigan, and it's a sport weight. It's chickadee. And I believe the color is gingerbread. It's like kind of a brown with red undertones. There mm-hmm. it is.
Ta-da! Here it is.
To be honest, it's been a couple years since I knit this. So I was going back and reading through a bunch of her information. Mm-hmm. And like, oh yeah, that sounds really familiar. Let's talk about top down knitting first. So she has a lot of information about measuring yourself for top down and... For so long, many people were just like, choose up on your bust size. And it's only been the last few years where people are starting to talk about upper bust measurements and how important your shoulders are and fit through your shoulders. How important that is for sweaters to fit properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for myself, because I am busty, that if I knit something that fits my full bust and go by that measurement... everything's loose.
Right.
And above there might be loose below, and usually have a really hard time with the armholes. They're like way too deep.
Really deep.
So like,
yeah.
Like a 43-inch bust would have like a 9.25-inch arm sky, where the depth of the armhole would be way deeper than I like it, which is about 8.5.
Right. Well, I think also top down kind of has gone through several evolutions. Like when I started knitting, you know, 10 plus years ago, everything was like the same kind of dumpy top down raglan where it wasn't fitted. It was very schlumpy in the shoulders, but I mean, it was very easy to knit though. You just didn't have to think very hard about it. But I think things have progressed so much where people are really demanding a much, you know, better fitting sweater, but they still love the ease of top down. So, you know, what she's got here is a much better designed, better fitting, more like fashionable looking top down sweater that doesn't...
And her sweaters are beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, goodness gracious, they are gorgeous. So she walks, she walks you through how fitting a set-in sleeve is different from fitting a sleeve cap. How they differ in the construction and kind of the distribution of fabric across the top of the arm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where this is different from other top-down things. I've done like Barbara Walker's top-down thing, but it is pretty square. It's fairly tight across the top of the sleeve. It doesn't give you a lot of extra room, and it's not contoured to fit kind of the like spherical shape of your
upper arm.
So if you just want to read this as a technical help book, I think it's really great. And she talks a lot about ratios, and you can easily... well, it sounds complicated, but you can easily... you can change it. Change the sleeve easily when you're working from the top down to fit your arm, like your personal shape of arm. But I think there's not a lot of focus paid on upper arms, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
If you want a really good fit through the shoulders, you have to take that into account.
Because I think most people I know who have knit various types of top down sit in sleeves are never entirely happy with the end result. Like sometimes they're too gappy, or like, I know I've talked on the podcast a million times about like how when I did Audrey Nunn's, that I feel like
pointy
on that pattern, there's too much, you're picking up too many stitches at the top of the sleeve cap, and makes the sleeve cap, the top of the sleeve kind of jut out. And I definitely see that, like that complaint a lot about various patterns, like the It's just never that's quite what
the,
right.
The kind of Barbara Walker ratio makes makes it square at the top of the shoulder, so you get those pokey bits.
Yeah.
Unless you're making the sleeve with a lot of negative ease, which then puts stress on the fabric.
Right. And then, so, but what I like with Elizabeth's book is also you've got some really simple sweaters. So just, but they're just, they're very elegant. They have like a few key details that really kind of elevate them and make them look very
and I love, fashionable. I love all the sweaters in here.
Yeah, I could easily knit any of them.
Do you have a favorite?
I'm leaning toward the, is it sans serif with the two color, the color blocked one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm leaning toward that.
Oh, no, that's serif.
Oh, that's serif, excuse me.
Yeah. They're all named after fonts.
Right. So. And, you know, and the cover sweater is just, like, dreamy.
Yeah.
Maris. Yeah. But I think when I started looking at it first, I thought, well, if I were going to really knit anything, like copper plate was the first one that came to mind for me. Just because I love an open front cardigan. But I just like the way that she's got various weights on the sweaters and very... just really simple details, but and beautifully photographed. So they're just, it's just very, elegant and everything looks so pristine in the book.
What I really liked about the photographs is there are a lot of photographs in this book. So they're close ups of different details, they're far away shots, so you can see the full sweater. They're on a person, which is great.
Yeah, it's none of the...
some of the detail shots are on a mannequin. But...
yeah. But it's not like one of those books where you're like, you can't quite tell, like, well, what is the... this, you know, what does the shoulder look like? Or what does this part look like? She's really... you've really got a lot of great photos to show you the whole garment.
Right. And the... I think the one I've been thinking about knitting a lot, which I think I mentioned in the last episode, is Clarendon, which is a pullover... and it's in an Aran weight. It's an Osprey. It's an Aran weight. But I love the deep ribbing on the cuffs and the little kind of vent. I think it'd be super cute with, like, slim cut pants and flats.
And the little shaping detail around the neckline is really cool, too. It's just a lot of, like, their designs are so, like, clean and I'd say, like, spare... that every little choice in the design, like the type, you know, the depth of the ribbing, like really does a lot for it, where it's not like they need to have a lot of bells and whistles.
They are well edited garments.
Yes, that is definitely true.
How I would describe them.
Yes.
So there is a ton of information in this book, just general sweater knitting information. The way Elizabeth knits top down sweaters is a little bit different because it is top down, but it's not. You're not like casting on the entire neckline.
Yeah.
I don't want to give too much away, but I read through her section on knitting a gauge swatch and the washing and blocking, and then her measuring the gauge. I've knit a ton of swatches. I've started to like it, which is kind of weird because usually I think of it as like knitting homework.
Yeah.
But I learned to. That there's a ton of information that you can get from it, like how your fabric's going to behave, your knitting gauge, all that stuff. But what I like is that she has a section within the gauge swatch section about adjusting for gauge differences for length, especially because when you're knitting from the top down, if you have any difference in gauge,
which I always do,
yeah. It's going to change the depth of your armhole and the length of your sweater. Mm-hmm. I think not a lot of people think about the row gauge as much as they think about the stitch gauge.
Or people think like, oh, I can add a couple of extra inches on, but like I encountered because of my weirdly squat row gauge when I knit Linny that I had to really rejigger the armhole because my, you know, the shaping was going to be all wrong. Because my stitches were much more squat than you know, what was called for in the gauge. So it is a really useful thing to get a handle on.
And she gives you, like, a little mathematic equation where you take, like, the row gauge you're supposed to have and your row gauge, and then you do this little equation, and then you can figure out exactly what differences you need mm-hmm. to make when you're knitting a sweater in your gauge. So just a ton of good information. It's a beautiful book. And the people at Quince are offering an ebook version. So I'm going to start a giveaway to one of our listeners. So I'm going to start a giveaway thread for that. Just say, I'd like to know two things. Yeah, two things. What your favorite pattern is, which I feel like is a common one. And what kind of, if you've knit a top-down sweater before, either what the pattern was or what type of top-down it was. I think for most people that's raglan, but there are some variations out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like contiguous sleeves and all that business. Oh, yeah. So that's what I would like to know, and I will start that soon and give it to the end of September.
All right.
So time to listen to this and post in the group.
Cool.
So thank you to Elizabeth for a beautiful book.
Yes, thank you.
I'm so happy I got to knit something from it. And for the copies for us and to Quince and Company for letting us have a giveaway for it.
Yeah.
Spread the sweater love. It's kind of what we're about right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So that'll segue into book reviews.
Okay.
Or other books.
Other books.
Yeah.
So I finished Hollow City, I think pretty shortly after we last recorded, which was the second Miss Peregrine book. And then I finished it, and then I went to put the next book on hold at the library and discovered that it hasn't been released yet.
Oh.
But it's being released at the end of this month.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm on hold for that. I did like Hollow City a lot.
You liked it better than the first one.
Right? Yeah, I just feel like it kind of, it just sort of settled into itself a little bit, where it didn't have to explain so much, and that you got to like know the characters a little bit more, because there's sort of a big cast of characters, getting to know all the different kids and more about them. It's like, it's not great literature, but it was a fun read, and it's a very engaging read, because it's just, you know, they're in constant peril, and this thing happens and that thing happens, mm-hmm. and so you're just kind of shuffling through.
Book.
Yeah. But when I finished that, we were in Portland, so at Powell's I picked up The Martian.
Oh, yeah. No, just read that.
Which I was really anxious to read, because I know you had enjoyed it, and mm-hmm. And Kathy had recommended, a lot of people I know have read it, and I am loving it, and it's sort of, again, it's another one of these books that's, like, each, like, it's not even the chapters, like, each bit is done as sort of like a journal entry, so it's these little nuggets, it's like two, maybe three pages,
mm-hmm.
so it's perfect for me for, like, before bedtime reading, when maybe I've only got 5 minutes to read, and I just can read, like, a little nugget,
mm-hmm.
and it is, and Wes is sitting in bed next to me, and every night he's like, "You sure are laughing a lot for a book about a guy stranded on Mars." So anyway,
it's funny. The main character's really
so
funny.
Aaron had reviewed it before. So the brief version is just that there is a manned mission to Mars, and because of a huge windstorm that happens, the mission has to leave one of the crew members behind. They think he's dead, but he's not. So it's all about him having to rely on his own ingenuity to survive
until hopefully
the next manned mission arrives on Mars.
Yep.
And it's very funny. So the main character who is, excuse me, you're reading his logs of what he's going through. He is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's just it. And so then there's a movie coming out next month with Matt Damon.
Yeah.
And so I have that sort of weird need, like I have to read the book before I can see the movie. So I really wanted to get it read before the movie came out. But I'm enjoying it so much. It's like, it's funny. It's interesting. It's like kind of Apollo 13-esque in its drama
mm-hmm.
of, you've only got, it's not like he can get more
stuff. Resources.
Like, you know, there's only so much food they brought with them. There's no food on Mars. Like, what do you do? And just the imagining of the author of all of these problems and trying to kind of science his way through them.
Yeah.
I have to really admire, and I also, so in Kathy's husband even had grudgingly acknowledged that the science seems fairly sound to him. except I think maybe he didn't think duct tape would work on Mars, but besides that, you know, because, you know, a lot of times, well, Kathy's husband is a geologist, or Kathy's a geologist too, but, you know, a lot of times books about science kind of gloss over the science part, yeah. and this is clearly a very well... I'm fascinated to know what the process was of, like, how did you get all this research?
Yeah, I didn't understand exactly some of it. I was like, yeah. I don't understand this is going to work, but I'm sure this is going to play out.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really crazy how it plays out.
Yeah, so. And I'm just, I'd be really, I think the edition that I have has some sort of interview with the author again.
Okay.
And I hope it discusses a bit about the research process to create this book, because... it is so science-based.
Yeah.
He's really, you know, it's not... The only science fiction part is the fact that they, like, made it all the way to Mars. You know, he's really basing all the things that happen to the character or the way the things he's trying to fix play out mm-hmm. based on real science.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's really interesting to me that he clearly, you know... did tons of research just to give it a very authentic feel. Like you really believe what's going on, and to just have a main character who is funny and self-deprecating, but very smart and resourceful. And
it's like one thing after another. Yeah. He's always just like, come on.
Anyway, it's really it's surprisingly funny.
It's not a very long book.
No, either. It's really I know, that's why it's such, it's like 350 pages, but I'm still like, I'm like 3 weeks into it and I'm only on page 200 something.
Yeah. So I'm kind of creeping it in through super tiny little chunks,
I know, so. I'm just creeping my way through it, but I really am enjoying it and I can't wait. Like, as soon as I'm done, I'm going to be like pushing it at Wes. Like, you read this now, and then making the kids read it too.
Yeah.
Because it's, I think it will has a really wide appeal. Yeah, it's just I'm just well done. I'm just very impressed with it. So,
yeah.
But that's all I've been reading. What are you doing?
I finished that P.G. Wodehouse book, Join the Morning, and that is hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great vacation reading.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, like, super light, very funny. You know, it didn't really matter if I had to put it down in the middle of a chapter or something. So, and Noah read it after me, and he liked it, so.
Good.
I read O Pioneers by Willa Cather, which I have read my Antonia, I think a few years ago. I really like her writing. I don't know that much about the prairies, except they're in the middle of the state or the country. So I really enjoy her descriptions of the prairie lands. And this... O Pioneers is, I believe, late 1800s and very early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when, it's kind of like the taming of the West.
Right.
The main character, Alexandra, her parents are from Sweden, I believe. And they've come to settle the land. Her dad's really sick. And she's the oldest child. So she's the one that's, you know, in charge of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a really good head on her shoulders, so she can see the potential of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one that bosses her brothers into farming in new ways and really kind of taming the land. But she also has this really great love for the land. But there are also family kind of issues because she's a woman and her brothers get older. They don't want to listen to her. When they get married, they split up the property, and of course her portion of the property really flourishes, and she's got this kind of old romance. She's still taking care of the youngest brother, and her whole thing is that she's gonna, you know, be really successful at farming so that her youngest brother doesn't have to do it, and he has this kind of illicit love affair that doesn't end well. You know, pioneer family,
pioneer stuff.
Farming.
Pioneer, hashtag pioneer problems.
But really interesting. I really liked it. And it's a slim book. I think it's, you know, there's the cat, a couple hundred pages. Yeah.
Hi, Sam. All right.
Get to hear that at like 3 in the morning, which is lonely. And now I'm reading Kill You Twice by Chelsea Kane. Apparently it's book number 5 in a series, but I don't care to go back and read the rest of them. They're like a serial killer cop series. I think it's Archie something, Gretchen Lowell. Gretchen Lowell, she's a female serial killer. And it's set in Portland in the surrounding area. I think the author might be from Portland. But it's pretty good. I mean, I'm not zipping right through it, but
there's all this back. And you're not feeling like you need to read the other one, so that's...
No. Not. I mean, I already know what happens eventually. Yeah. So what happened... I know what happened was that Archie and Gretchen had a relationship. Mm-hmm. She was, like, some kind of psychologist. Of course, she was some kind of psychologist that came into work with Archie on a task force to find a serial killer. Spoiler alert, she's the serial killer. But, I mean, there's 4 books worth of this. So, but he finally, she, like, tortures him or something, and he catches her after, and she ends up in a mental institution. Now there's, like, the series of copycat killers or something. Killings happening in Portland, and he's trying to figure out what's going on, and somehow... Mm-hmm. Gretchen and this other serial killer are related. That's where I'm at.
All right.
That's fine. Okay. I don't normally read, like... I mean, I like true crime books, but I don't normally read, like, cop detective stories. Mm-hmm. So, once in a while, like an Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
Like that kind of reader. So, anyway.
All right. Well, so watching... I haven't watched a ton of stuff lately. I watched Wet Hot American Summer, the series, which I know you'd already watched and you were kind of lukewarm on. And I feel like it's one of those things, like, if you really love the original, you know, it's okay enough to watch and it's funny and it's fun. And it's just kind of crazy that they got everybody back to make it now because they're all so much more famous than when they first did. I mean,
they're only 20 minutes long and there are, like, 6 of them or something. So it's not, like, a huge investment of time.
So it's fun, though. It's really silly.
Of Paul Rudd's entrance. Yeah. My favorite part of the whole thing.
And then I watched Tig, which is a documentary about the comedian Tig Notaro, who... I don't think I'm giving anything away. She... I mean, she had been doing stand-up for years, but she had had a series of kind of catastrophic life events that culminated with a cancer diagnosis, and she had done a live set at a comedy club with a number of famous comedians in the audience in which she just spoke, like, just, like, came on and said, like, I have cancer, and did this whole set about what she was going through that became sort of, like, overnight famous, like, incredibly famous. So this documentary is sort of about, like, where does she go from there? So, I mean, she'd been doing stand-up for years and years and years, and she'd been in tons of stuff, and she's been right around shows. She's actually, she's in a World, the Lake Bell movie, which I really liked, and she's been on Amy Schumer, and she's, you know, she's done all this stuff, but, anyway, but it was an interesting little look into her as a person. I've also, she's also done segments, for This American Life. And I think also The Moth. So I'd heard her talk about some of these aspects of her life, like her mother's death and her relationship with her stepfather. And anyway, but I thought it was really, really nicely done. And then I just watched the first episode, and I just found out that I can stream the rest of it, of the USA series Mr. Robot, which I'd been hearing about as being a really good show. But, I mean, the short version, it's about a hacker. Who sort of ends up, I mean, someone who is a hacker, but he works for a security firm, and ends up kind of being pulled into a much bigger...
Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum.
But it's very, I don't know, there's something a little different about it. I enjoyed the first episode a lot, so I want to watch the rest of that. I also watched the whole first season of a TV show called Another Period, which I think is a Comedy Central show. And it's created by one of the women from Garfunkel and Oates and another stand-up comedian. And the best way to describe it is it's Downton Abbey meets Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Oh my God.
So you have sort of the most new money family in Newport, like in that like just before the turn of the century,
mm-hmm.
And how they're like desperate to be like part of society.
Yeah, they're nouveau riche.
Yeah, but it's sort of shot like a reality TV, like they're like a Real Housewives kind of thing. And it is super over the top. It is super poor taste. If you're easily offended, do not watch it. But it's really funny, and it's got, like Christina Hendricks is in it, and, Michael Ian Black, who's also in White Hot American Summer. Yeah, it's really funny. It's really silly. It's just totally stupid, frivolous fun, but I enjoyed that. And I just started watching the television adaptation of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a book that I never finished because I didn't really care for it. I felt like it really kind of dragged and I could kind of see where it was going. But it was weird that I felt like I was interested in watching the TV show because I didn't really enjoy the book that much. But I feel like at least the first episode of the TV show, what I like about it is they've kind of given it, I don't know, it's less stodgy for me than the book felt, and they've lightened it a little bit, and it stars Eddie Marsan, who's an actor that I really enjoy a lot. But I've only watched the first episode of it, and maybe also because it's such a visual idea, I was sort of curious to see it. So I just started watching that too. But that's about it. And you've got a long list.
Yeah, I watched The Nick.
Which just saw is on HBO now.
Yeah, it's on HBO for a limited time.
Oh,
until season 2 starts on Cinemax, because it's a Cinemax show.
Oh, because so I just saw it like yesterday that it was on there. Yeah. And I'm like, I want to watch that.
Yeah, it's only there for 10 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So, and I don't know how long it's been on there, but I watched the whole series, so at least that long.
Oh, okay.
It's a 1900 period hospital drama starring Clive Owen as a lead surgeon. And
then Steven Soderbergh's like the producer on it or something?
He's a director.
He's a director, okay.
Mm-hmm. So it is really good. I mean, basically it's a hospital drama with super gross stuff.
I was gonna say with like old surgery practices, right?
Which is like them a lot of it's them figuring out how to do stuff.
How to saw things off.
So if you are easily grossed out, because there are lots of close-ups of things,
oh, skinny,
then probably not for you, but, so Clive Owen is the lead surgeon, he's an addict, so he spends a lot of time in opium dens, and also taking cocaine, because cocaine was legal at that point, as was heroin, just for people who don't know that, the Bayer Company, actually, were the ones that marketed heroin, I believe.
All right.
Anyway, just, you know, for funsies. So it's him, and then he has just taken over for the lead surgeon after something happens to him. So he's in charge. They need another assistant lead or whatever. And instead of promoting the guy that he wants, an African-American surgeon is brought on.
Huh.
Because the hospital, the Knickerbocker Institute, is funded by a wealthy family, basically, and they want this guy, Algernon, to come on, and he's been in Europe doing all this, like, cutting-edge surgery stuff there. So there's some, a bit of racially, like, offensive language, which is, you know, it's 1900. It's,
yeah.
And, you know, they just say it like it's nothing, you should be offended. I was offended. But I think the series also uses that to, you know, to show what living in New York as an African American was like in 1900. also, like, the ambulance drivers who are Irish, and how, just, like, basically how the hospital works in 1900 is totally different, and how it looks is totally different. The Institute is going through electrification at that point, and so there are all these problems with machines not working correctly, which does not have good consequences.
Yes, I can imagine.
You know, and a lot of Typhoid Mary's in it, which is yay! Yeah. Yeah, I love her.
Big fan.
But I really liked it, and the first episode was very off-putting.
Oh.
I was like, I don't know, but after, when I started the second episode, I was like, okay, it's not, I mean, it's the first episode, so it was like, you know, in with a bang.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Highly enjoyable, though. Cool. It's 10 episodes, and it's on HBO now for like 8 or 10 weeks.
Oh, okay. I gotta get it on it and watch that, because I really wanted to see it.
I also watched The Leftovers, which is a series on HBO, which takes place, it's current day.
Yes.
Takes place 3 years after 2% of the world's population just disappears. And it's in a small town back east, I think in Maine. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. So there's like a weird cult that pops up.
Well, so I've watched the first episode of this, so it's like nobody knows how they disappeared. No. So a lot of people think it's like a rapture. And people lost a child, people lost a spouse.
Woman lost all of her family.
Right. So all these people are sort of struggling to understand this new world they live in. And so there's a lot of like nihilism, because people think maybe life has no meaning, or that they were, you know, they've been left behind, or that people then also start forming these like strange religious ideas around it. I couldn't get past that first episode. It was very upsetting.
That's pretty upsetting. I've heard the whole thing's really dark.
And I know they're about to come out with season two.
It has Liv Tyler in it.
Amy Brennan.
I say Christopher Eccleston, but I'm not sure if that's correct. I want to say that's right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But there's like a story with a cop, and then his wife, their two kids, kind of new leaders that emerge after, like religious leaders that emerge after this happens. And someone's like, you know, and there are always new stories, because it's, I think it half of the episodes take place like very close to the 3-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So tensions are really high between like people who lost people who didn't lose anyone, and the religious people, and then kind of cult nihilists.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of struggle in this small town where this all takes place. So I don't know. It was interesting. It's not like a happy show to watch.
No, it's very upsetting.
Yeah. And now I'm watching The Wire.
Oh,
I went back and I started watching season two, because I'd watched season one a long time ago, so I'm like way back. And then a couple weeks ago, I went and saw a double feature at Central Cinema of Valley Girl and Wild at Heart. Valley Girl's a 1983 like romantic comedy,
awesome movie
with Nicolas Cage.
Baby Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Nicolas Cage movies, of which there are three. and then Wild at Heart, which is one of my other favorite Nicolas Cage movies, which is a David Lynch movie with Laura Dern and Willem Dafoe.
And Diane Ladd. Laura Dern's real mom playing
There's
her mom.
Weird Wizard of Oz subplot that goes through the
and
whole thing.
And a bunch of Twin Peaks folks are at Sherilyn Fenn's in there, Cheryl Lee's in there.
Mm-hmm. It's weird.
It's got a great soundtrack.
It does.
Coco Taylor and Elvis.
It's super violent, though.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's David Lynch.
Yeah. And I hadn't seen him before.
Oh.
Neither had Cat.
Oh, were they like,
You
traumatized them?
It's like, you're in for a treat. And afterward, they just kind of looked at me and like, watch it as a comedy? Which is not a comedy.
It's not a comedy, no.
Like, you're messed up.
It's a weird one.
I like it.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater with a friend, like, before I started dating Wes, and then I was like, oh, it's so good, you should see it, and we watched it together, and then I was like, damn, this is a lot weirder than I remember. It's like really freaky movie.
By the time I didn't know about it, and besides Twin Peaks, that's like his one movie with a really coherent plot.
Yeah, I was.
So it's a good entry level David Lynch.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
It's totally weird.
But it's cool. Yeah, well, that's fun.
Yeah, that's it.
All right.
Right. I wanted to add really quick, if you want to hear Elizabeth Doherty talk about her book, she was interviewed on Helen Stewart's podcast.
Oh, okay.
Curious Handmaid.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to it there. And I think she was also interviewed on The Knitting Pipeline with Paula Emmons Feasley. So you can listen to her there. And she gives a little bit different information on both of those interviews. And they're both good. So
cool.
If you want to hear her talk in her own words, instead of just hearing me gush about how awesome the book is, you can find those and take a listen.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Show notes at doubleknit.net, and you can join us on Ravelry at DoubleKnit Podcast Fans.
And I will post the giveaway thread. That'll be up through the end of the month. And join us for Cardi Party.
Yeah.
Hashtag Cardi Party 2015 for those of you on Instagram. Yes.
Oh, I haven't been checking the Instagram hashtag.
No, there's not a whole lot.
No?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
That's why I'm saying it here.
Okay. Start using that hashtag.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
This world is not my home. This world is not my home. Pass through. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. I can't live at home in this world anymore. Can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world anymore. Anymore. I can't live at home in this world. This world where my children, this world where my children have gone before. This world where my children, this world where my children, this world where my children have gone before. I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home. At home in this world anymore. I can't live at home.